I thought you had left.
I have. I'm speaking to you from another world, and you have been.
Oh no, not left behind.
Left behind.
Webcasting to the world.
Do you remember the moment you saw yourself in God and God in you, and you were one with the universe and God and everybody?
Knowing the truth about the gospel.
You were one with the prostitutes and pimps and priests and kings, and there was nobody on earth that was better than you nor less than you.
That we are all righteous.
And no one on earth was any less in Christ than anyone else.
That's Mike Williams, and this is the Gospel Revolution.
Welcome to the Gospel Revolution Powercast for July the 24th, 2014, coming to you from the GR Studios right here in Nashville, Tennessee, where with Johann Wolfgang von Goethe, we say, the hardest thing to see is what is right in front of your eyes. And from Houston, Texas, here is the founder and president of the Gospel Revolution, that holy heretic himself, Michael Williams.
Good evening, Barris Bartlett.
Good evening to you, too.
It is a beautiful day in Houston. How are things in good old Nashville, Tennessee?
Well, it's a broad, bright, moonlight night tonight.
Wonderful. I would say same here because I don't know what you're saying, and I can't agree.
three of my four grandparents were Scottish, and that's just a Scottish saying. I don't know what it means. I think it means it's. I think it means it's a nice night tonight, a broad, bright moonlight night tonight. See, should I do this show with a Scottish accent? Do you think? We have a donor from Edinburgh. I can do a Glasgow accent, and that would really anger him. So, Mike, this week we are finishing off the things that have changed since the cross. We did three last week. We're doing two this week. But before we do, can I bring up a couple of thoughts here?
You can, sir. I give permission.
Well, first thing is, I was knocked out by Jeff's video, Seven Things the Bible Doesn't Say. And we've been saying that the Bible said these things all our lives. I was just knocked out by the video. I thought it was great. Have you seen it yet?
Yes, I have. It was very good.
Kind of things that people, I mean, it's like the animals all went in two by two, but actually they didn't and so forth. And he's really
good. Sounds like they went in seven by seven.
Well, if you wanted perfect DNA, you'd need the number of perfection, I guess. Hey, now here's another thought that occurred to me this week. It's about the Great Tribulation, and what we've often heard said was, when it says those times will be cut short, even the very elect will be deceived, and yada, yada, yada. What I was raised to believe was that that was a Great Tribulation. And it only occurred to me just the other day, I must be getting freer by the day. My poor little crippled brain, crippled by Christianity, suddenly asked myself this question. Why did it have to be cut short? Didn't God know how bad it was going to get, or what?
Yeah, for sure. I remember going through those. That's one of those end time things that for me got redeposited again at the cross. And, you know, if you read through that, if we hadn't been taught Christianity, it would probably sound fairly logical that that was talking about the days of tribulation during the time of Jesus. And the fact that it was, that this is, goodness, you talk about turmoil. It was great tribulation during that time. And anytime you read the term being cut short or cut off or any of those things, please suspect the cross because those days were cut short. And the power of those passages then, of course, directs us to understanding even more about the cross.
Or left behind, I guess.
Or left behind, yeah.
Now, I wanted to read something that I discovered this week. I just thought this was pure gold. So I'll read it straight through. And it's by somebody called Annette Hunsberger Presley. Well, never heard of it, but anyway. She's no dumb cookie. She writes, "It's funny, we don't get upset when someone adopts a child, even though that child doesn't have a choice in the matter. We think it's cool that someone wanted the child, chose the child, and included the child in their family because it means the child now belongs and has a home and doesn't have to be alone anymore. But when it comes to God adopting us, well, we just can't have that because it's a violation of our free will to be adopted and included without our consent. I mean, how dare God choose us and include us in his family without allowing us to choose him first? How dare God give us a loving home and a sense of belonging even while we see through a glass darkly? How dare God call us his beloved sons and daughters in whom he delights even while we handle our pain in destructive ways? How dare God choose what is good for us even when we are incapable of knowing what is good for us? How is free will better than being loved, wanted, accepted, and included before you know enough to choose what is good for you? Perhaps my children would have been better off if I had left them to themselves after they were born until they decided to choose me as their mother. How would free will have served them better than my choosing to care for them without their consent?
Powerful. You know, it is really amazing. There's two ways, basically, that you become a part of a family. One is by birth and one is by adoption. I think it is amazing that both terms are used when it's being explained to us how we become a part of, quote, the family of God. And one is by new birth and one is by adoption. Both of those terms are used to describe how all of us are included and all are adopted and all have been born. We've got it double both ways. We were born into and adopted into the family of God, each and every one of us. Not like some of us were born into it and some were adopted. But these two terms, both of them are as she says here, which really is very powerful, both of them are without our will completely and totally. And I think she really has hit the nail on the head is that, you know, being loved without your will, without requiring anything reciprocal from you. And isn't that the really trying thing? When children do have a first begin to develop a will, their will is not to love you. And they go through the twos and the threes and you're the enemy. And my goodness, few parents have not experienced that time. And of course, if it was up to their will, then of course they would be choosing anyone but mommy and daddy at the moment. But and the parents, they love those children right through those times. So yeah, it's a powerful thought, and the issue of man's will being involved in our new covenant relationship with God is just absolutely asinine. If you want to read about man's will being involved in a covenant with God, then you have to read the Old Testament and not know what the New Testament, which is in the blood of Christ, is. If you want to see how it turns out when man has a role in his own relationship with God, we find out that was a complete failure.
Michael, what's happening in Kenya? Do we know anything new?
Nothing new. I have not heard from Kenya in the last two or three days. I know the radio shows are continuing. I know that things there are still kind of rough.
On both stations?
Yes, on both stations. From what I understand, one of them goes out on Monday and one goes out on Thursday, I believe. Tuesday or Thursday.
One on a Catholic station, one on a Muslim station.
Yes, that is correct.
I believe that we can claim to be the very first organization in the world, the Gospel Revolution, that is putting out the message of Jesus Christ and the redemption of humanity on any Muslim station anywhere, I think we'd be on safe ground, don't you?
I think. Well, we're going to say it till proven wrong, and we welcome anyone to prove us wrong. So that's kind of the way things go. You know, my whole life has been saying things until I'm proven wrong, and I keep saying them until I'm proven wrong.
Mike, do you remind me, years ago I started an organization in Australia called Citizen Justice, and a buddy of mine who's a son was killed in a Pizza Hut robbery. He started a similar organization called Enough is Enough, and I rang him up and I said, look, I've just come up with a really great way of putting some facts, and that was that Australians spend more on toilet paper than on the rehabilitation of people who are in our prison system. It's really a punishment system. It's not a rehab system at all. And he said to me, sounds good to me. Use it until someone proves that you're wrong. And no one ever did. So we're on safe ground. So Moses and his family are still operating the School of the Scriptures. And for those of us, because this is a Pledge Drive broadcast, for those of us who are wondering what happens to the money that comes into the Gospel Revolution, we love funding the gospel. We just love funding the gospel on a Muslim station. We just love funding the gospel on a Muslim station in an African nation. We just love it.
Yeah.
So how's the Pledge Drive going, Mike?
Well, from what I understand, the one-time gifts, I think we are above $5,000 now. That means we're only $5,000 away from you having to give up your money. Dum, dum,
dum, dum. But hang on, no, isn't this monthly pledges, not one-time pledges? I'm giving my money up for people who have a new monthly pledge, aren't we? What am I doing?
I'm gonna switch it to including this. Do I have the right to do that?
Oh, yeah, if you want, because I'm actually starting to hurt this month.
We are going on up. Hopefully, we would get $10,000 in. We certainly do need it. But our our monthly contributions are going up slowly. But I don't think right now you stand in a whole lot of danger of losing anything at this moment, Paris, because we are going into the third week of Pledge Drive, and I don't think we're anywhere near $1,000 a month increase whatsoever.
Ouch. I rang up Jeff and I said, listen, everyone you grab on the phone, make sure they know that what I'm doing. And I think he was a little bit too sensitive. He's a little bit too new agey sensitive-y, caring, politically correct, caring about your feelings-y things-y. And he seemed to hum and ah a bit and say, he didn't actually say, well, I couldn't do that. These people are too nice.
Yeah.
But I said to him, hey, listen, mate, you back up the hearse and let them smell the flowers.
Yes. You know, when you first brought this up, Barris, I was, of course, had the response that I did, and I first told you I forbid it, and then, of course, I realized that I couldn't forbid you to do anything. But I thought about it even after that, and I thought, now wait a minute. What if people love Barris Bartlett so much that they don't want him to give up his glorious wealth track to
my prince's ransom,
financial freedom, you know, that he gets from the from Mike Williams Ministries. What if they love you so much they don't want that to happen? It's like, wait a minute. I'm not so sure this is a good idea. We need to have a culprit who is saying, I'll give this if it reaches this amount. We need to have somebody that's, you know, it's like the target you hang up on the wall and you're throwing darts at, who is going to lose money if they give a certain amount. I'm not sure that you losing money is is quite the threat that we need it to be.
I don't think I'll be able to afford to do the PowerCast anymore. How's that? Does that up the ante some?
Well, yes, but see, that means if they give too much, you will not be doing the PowerCast anymore. So it's a catch-22. It is a complicated matching funds commitment. That is for sure. So,
well, just to let listeners know, in case they missed the last couple of weeks, that have been a little bit up and down. I've made the commitment that I'm going to forego this month's income that I get from the Gospel Revolution if we reach a certain level of pledges.
Mm-hmm.
And what are you saying? It is. It's you switching it around on me now.
Oh no, it's $1,000 that you committed to. That's we have to go up. We have to have $1,000 a month in new or increased monthly pledges before you give up your month's salary.
And now you're trying to let me off the hook by switching it to one times.
No, I'm trying to put you doubly on the hook by saying that if it goes to 10,000, either way, whether we get one times of 10,000 or if we get monthlies that are 1,000, you lose both ways.
Dang.
My compassion just kicked in this morning, and I just couldn't help myself.
Yeah, it sounds like you got oceans of this stuff. Somehow I don't feel compassion, Don. I'm not sure what that means.
You don't feel that blanket of love?
I feel a blanket, but I'm not sure what it is.
You feel the sticks coming down on you after the blanket goes over your head. Eh?
Oh, there you go. Yeah. The water dripping on me through the blanket.
Gospel Revolution.
Well, hi, Bears. I have, a few more names to announce this week. We have Judy Tanini in Huntsville, Alabama, and Billy Thompson in Wachuca City, Arizona. Tim and Beth Knappenberger in Canton, Ohio. Deidre Simpson in Kelowna, British Columbia. Jerry and Susan Berman in Longwood, Florida. Sorry, I lost my place. We have Tom and Linda Wilby in Fredericton, New Brunswick. Rosa Walker in West Monroe, Louisiana. I got to see her on my trip back from Arizona. Bill and Jeannie Schultz in Pollock Pines, California. Glenn and Twyla Buchholz in Detroit Lakes, Minnesota. Lee Dick in Kelowna, British Columbia. Danny Miniscanians in Studio City, California. And then we have Bernard Rouse, and I believe he's in Michigan. I don't have his location. And David Dwyer in Brisbane, Australia. And I think I mentioned David last week, actually. But never hurts to mention you guys twice. Folks, we are a little further along than we were last week. However, when it comes to the monthlies, we're way below $100. And, of course, we need at least $1,100 to break even in new monthly pledges. So anybody who can consider any creative way of giving on a regular basis, please call me. Let me know what you're thinking. We'll work with you. And, of course, we'll be very grateful as well. So call me at 321-220-4373 and have a good week.
So they are the people who've given into the pledge drive so far. These people, Michael, are more than just our bread and butter. They're our gold and silver. These people are our heroes.
No doubt, and we certainly do appreciate it. We are having to this is a long, dry summer so far for the Gospel Revolution. And at any point, especially between now and October, that you guys can jump in and help us, even if it's not right now. It is going to be nip and tuck between now and October, which is when we get a bit of relief, which I've explained that before. And I won't go back into it and beleaguer it again. But between now and October, we're now, I'm counting days. It's like, come on, pass another day. because the days are longer than our funds are right now.
Well, mate, I don't know what Laura and I are going to do. My ailing wife, do you like that? I don't know what my ailing wife and myself are going to do when we have to give up the thin gruel and go back to solid food, because perhaps our bodies won't take it.
Yes, I know. We are, it is a tight squeeze. Goodness gracious. Thank goodness we can laugh about it. Thank goodness we can be lighthearted about it. But, I mean, here we are. We're creeping up.
Who's being lighthearted about this? What? You speak for yourself.
We're creeping up on the 1st of August, and then it's like, okay, so all of August, all of September, and half of October. So we're coming up on where that I can officially say we only got 2.5 months into this extremely tight place that we're in, unless things come across in the pledge drive and we get some relief. I don't like being stuck where we are right now. It consumes too much of my time and thought to have to be concerned about these finances when we've got other things to do, actually.
Now, last week we talked about things that had changed since the cross, and we talked about the priesthood having changed. I know you kicked it off with the law, but I like to start with that priesthood, the one that wasn't real good at doing what it was supposed to do. It was a very temporary kind of a bandage. And then the next thing was that if the priesthood changed, well, by golly, the law had to change as well. So not only, I mean, it wasn't a case of either or, it was a case of if this, then that. If the priesthood changed, then the law had been changed, then heaven and earth had been changed. Mm-hmm. That was powerful stuff last week, Michael.
It was. Only thing is, you got it wrong. We did start with the priesthood, and then the second was the law. But that's okay. It's not really that important.
Okay. We're starting early this show. All right.
For the priesthood being changed, there is made of necessity. Now, we can even stop just right there. Because the priesthood changed, now there's a necessity for change across the board, actually, when as we begin to look at these things, the six doctrines of Christ's teachings that Paul said that we should leave behind. Hebrews chapter 6. When we realize that these teachings that Paul brought up about the teachings of Christ, happened before Christ became our great high priest.
So all of the teachings of Jesus occurred under a faulty law,
faulty
and a
priesthood.
Faulty priesthood.
And these are the doctrines of a faulty priesthood, these six things that Paul said that we should leave behind. The doctrine of eternal judgment, faith toward God. This is how drastically this changed. If the priesthood changed, these teachings have changed. The law has changed. So when we say the priesthood changed, there is necessity of a change. There's change across the board when the priesthood changes, and even the teachings changed. The teaching about baptisms, the teachings about eternal judgment, teachings of faith toward God, the doctrines of repentance. There's six of them all together, and what a powerful insight that is. These things all changed. They changed. Thank God they changed. And the priesthood being changed, there is of necessity a change also of the law. And the thing that we concluded, if you read all of this in its context, is that the priesthood changed to this degree, that the old priesthood was not done away with in part, but in whole. Any earthly priesthood was completely done away with. And to that degree, there is a necessity of change also of the law. Now, we know that Jesus said if there's any change to the law at all, if there's any change to the law at all, it means that all of the law and all the prophets have been fulfilled.
Well, that's what James said when he said, if you break one, you break them all. And and Paul said something similar. And Jesus himself said that not one jot or tittle will pass away until heaven and earth passes away. Or at least he said the heaven and earth will pass away before that passes away.
Yes. Even Jesus included the changing of everything. The three things that we've covered, Jesus covered in that one verse. And Bears, pull that up so that people can read that.
I'm going to start a verse early. Matthew 5, 17 says, "Think not that I am come to destroy the law or the prophets. I am not come to destroy, but to fulfill," or if you like, to fill up. "For verily I say unto you, till heaven and earth pass, one jot or one tittle shall in no wise pass from the law." A jot or a tittle is a little mark, like, say, we'd use, you know, crossing the T's and dotting your I's. "Not one jot or tittle shall pass in any wise from the law until all be fulfilled."
Mm-hmm. It really is quite amazing. There in that verse, Jesus himself taught what Paul teaches in Hebrews from chapter 1 through chapter 7. And this complete connection between heaven and earth passing away. Now, heaven and earth, that was the next one that we went into, which is Hebrews 1:12. And Jesus said,
"Till heaven and earth pass, one jot or one tittle shall in no wise pass from the law till all be fulfilled."
Powerful. So the prophets and the law changed at the same time when heaven and earth passed. Paul also spoke about how that sin had been completely done away with. If the law's been done away with, the statement also is true that where there is no law, there is no sin. So all of these things are so tied together that you cannot have one to remain when another one has been set aside. If one is set aside, they are all set aside. That is one tapestry of doctrine of an old covenant that you cannot take part of it out and keep it, as the Catholics did with the priesthood and said, "Oh, well, we're going to extend the priesthood right straight out of the Levitical priesthood of the Old Covenant, and we're going to have priests. And we're also going to continue sin. We're not going to let go of that one, and we're not going to let go of the law. The law is still in effect, and we're still waiting for heaven and earth to be dissolved and to be done away with." All of the changes that Paul spoke of and that Christ spoke of, especially these three, Christianity does not preach, teach, embrace, think, convey on any level that these things are true, that these things have changed. Christianity is built on a faulty priesthood. Why in the world are people switching from the great high priest of Christ and going back? Let's read what Paul said about that. He said that it was imperfect. This is something that ended 2,000 years ago. And through the power of this death, burial, and resurrection, we saw a complete death to the current, at that time, the current heaven and earth that God himself created. And that's the third one that we went into. And he says that these things are the creation of your hands, O God, and they shall be destroyed. They are the creation of your hands, and they are going to be done away with completely, and they shall be folded up as a vesture and be put away. And he says that these things would be done by God himself. We're here to tell you God himself did change all these things. That's why you're free.
Can I take us to Matthew 24?
Thou mayest.
I know that we have two more biggies to cover, and these are they're huge, and we might get to them today, and I hope we get to them today. But I'm just remembering the other place where Jesus said, "My words will never pass away, but heaven and earth will." Mm. And he didn't say might. He says in Hebrews 24:35. Now I know that for those of our friends who are praetorists and those of our friends who are rapturists and all manner of people have all manner of different ways of taking Matthew 24 and interpreting it. But I'm just going to take the words that Jesus uses and not try. And all I'm going to do is just say, well, this happened and that happened, and let's just see what fits here. When you put a jigsaw together, Mike, you don't wet the bit of cardboard until it fits the shape. You actually keep trying different shapes and to see what's going to fit here. And so that's all I want to do here. But
very good.
In Matthew 24, he says to the disciple, and the chapter starts by them going, oh, look at the lovely gold gates of the tabernacle, the temple. Aren't they gorgeous? Oh, look at the filigrees. Look at that wonderful, the carvings. And oh, isn't it great? And Jesus says, meh, it's going. The whole thing's going. Oh, well, they said, well, when will the end of this age be? World, or aeon, it's called. When will the end of this? And then Jesus starts to talk to them and tell them when the end of this age will be. And he says, verse 35 of Matthew 24, heaven and earth shall pass away, but my words shall not pass away. Mm-hmm. But of that day and hour, no man knows. No, not even the angels of heaven, but my Father only. But I'll give you a clue, he says. But as the days of Noah were, so shall also the coming of the Son of Man be. Okay, so we've got two things here. There's a comparison happening between what happened in Noah and what this coming of the Son of Man, not the Son of God, the Son of Man be. King James has capitalized that son. We don't know whether it's a capital or not. For as in the days that were before the flood, they were eating and drinking, marrying and giving in marriage until the day that Noah entered into the ark. Now, I was raised to believe that meant they were cussing and swearing, sex, drugs, and rock and roll, and it'll be just like that in the last days before Jesus comes back in the year 2010 or something like that. But the point is, they didn't know that the flood came. That is the point he's making.
Yes.
They were just living life, didn't even realize the flood had come, and took them all away. So also shall the coming of the Son of Man be. What will the coming of the Son of Man will be like? People won't even know it's happened, but it will have happened. Then, he says, the very next thing. Now, I tell you who helped me with this. I think it was Mel Martin from over in Georgia that one night around a pool down in Cullman, Alabama, and with you there. And you told the story, or someone told the story about two women grinding at the mill. Then shall two be in the field, one shall be taken, the other left, and the law was taken.
Mm-hmm.
Two women will be grinding at the middle, one will be taken, the other left, the law was taken. Watch therefore, for you don't know when it's going to happen. So what we have here is Jesus saying, as it was in the days of Noah, it'll be like when in the day of the Son of Man. Noah was the sole progenitor of the whole of the rest of the world's population. Jesus Christ, I wonder what if he was the sole progenitor of mankind now.
And you know, one of the comparisons in the comparing the flood to the cross is that heaven and earth were done away with at the flood. The way heaven and the way earth were designed, according to the writings of Genesis, heaven and earth were completely changed. The flood of Noah actually was a something that scientifically was possible. People will always have the choice as to whether or not to believe whether or not it actually happened or not. But according to the Genesis account, the heavens were completely different then. There was a protection or a vapor barrier, if you will, above the earth, and there was the water was contained mostly within the earth.
And that was called the firmament, wasn't it? The firmament which was above the earth.
Yeah. The firmament above the earth, and then now we do not know how much of the waters of the oceans that are now here used to be inside the earth. As we brought this new scientific paper from to you just a few weeks ago from Northwest University at Chicago. And what we're saying here is that things changed drastically at the flood of Noah, where that a new heaven and a new earth in essence took over even after that. And that was a very powerful thing to happen. To say, now if that did happen, and the more we're learning, just like we're learning about where water actually came from, it came from within the earth, not from the other planets or asteroids. But just think of the fact that of the water that we know that's on the face of the earth, I forget how many times the it said that the waters in contained in the earth are greater than the volumes of water on the surface of the earth, but as many times more inside the earth than there is outside the earth. And it looks as though that it's really possible, it would be a theory, that the waters that are now above the earth used to be inside the earth, all of it. And that at the flood of Noah, when these waters of the deep begin to come up, that a great deal of the waters that we now swim in, we take cruises across, that too used to be inside the earth.
So as in the days of Noah, so also shall the coming of the Son of Man be. Mm-hmm. Now, he was the Son of Man. He was also the Son of God. And as you say, he was a pure seed.
Yes.
And I like that picture that you paint with that, Mike. He was a pure seed, and he was – and in Genesis chapter 6, there's a verse that says a very interesting thing. It says, "And Noah was pure in all of his genes." Now, mm-hmm. the word in the King Jimmy is generations, and other versions have taken that on. But what does that mean? It means nothing. The same word is actually DNA. It's genes or genetics. And he was the only one that was pure in all of his genetics. Now, without going into all of the possibilities of Nephilim and what all could be and what all might be and what all we're going to guess at, we do know one thing. He was the only one pure in all of his genes. And so Jesus, the seed of the second Adam, the seed, the progenitor, the prototype of the new species, the new creation, was pure in all of his genes. And I am forced to recognize that all of those things physical in Israel that you could touch. Remember what Michael said. He said that everything that was a what in the Old Testament became a who in the New Testament. Well, one of the what's in the Old Testament, of all the what's in the Old Testament, were physical. There was a physical tabernacle. There was a physical priest. There was a physical sacrifice. There was a physical heaven and earth.
Mm-hmm.
And all of those physical things were types and shadows of what was to come. The very fact that there was a heaven and earth and it changed was typifying. In fact, Jesus here calls it. He doesn't use these words. We use these words. But he identifies it as a type and a shadow of what's going to come spiritually when heavens and earth pass away.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, it is just such a powerful picture that no matter which thread of this tapestry you follow, you still get the picture. And this tapestry of truth is made up of thousands of strands of truth, and every one of them, you can follow them through all individually. But no matter how far you follow them, the one thing you're going to do every time you step back and look at that strand in its context, it's all the same picture. You can study the issue of the destruction of heaven and earth as we did on our last show, and we're talking about again today. You can talk about sin. You can talk about sacrifices, priesthoods, laws. You can talk about righteousness, judgment, punishment, penalty, all of them. And they all are a perfect, follow any one of those threads and do it with this in mind. Everything changed at the cross.
Everything.
Everything changed.
Everything changed. This is why Jesus follows this teaching through with these pictures. There'll be two in the field. Mm-hmm. One will be taken, the other left. The old was taken, the new was left.
Yeah, absolutely. And when we look at this new picture, everything changed. You cannot teach on righteousness as something that is done by the law. Why? Because law has been done away with. You can't teach about sin as something that is an obedience to the law. Why? Because the law has been done away with. You can't teach about law because the priesthood that was appointed by the law, that has been done away with. You can't talk about heaven and earth as being two separate places now because heaven and earth were destroyed. They were folded up like a vesture. The thing that caused us to perceive God in a heaven and man on an earth, the cross destroyed that entire image and put it away and caused the two now to become one.
One Lord, one faith, one baptism, one God above and Father of all. One hope in a life that was given, a new life arisen, one Spirit inside of us all.
Gospel Revelation.
Michael, I'd like to take us just momentarily to 2 Corinthians 10. And there is Mr. Al Vitale ringing me. And Al, when you hear this on the show, you're calling me at 10:53 a.m. on Monday, July 21st, 2014. Sorry, I'm not answering you. Now, Mike, Paul says here, and I'm going to change the word flesh to read law. If you just bear with me, I'd really appreciate that, family. Mm-hmm. Some people, he says in verse 2, think that I am bold against some or hard on people who think of us as if we walked according to the law or the flesh, if you like. Mm-hmm. For though we walk in the law, we don't war after the law. For though we walk in the flesh, the actual words read, we don't war after the flesh. For the weapons of our warfare are not carnal, but mighty through God to the pulling down of strongholds. Or Nock puts it in the concordant version, bulwarks. Casting down imaginations and every high thing that exalts itself against the knowledge of God, and bringing into captivity every thought to the obedience of Christ. Now, don't think of this as I'm bringing all my thoughts to obey Christ, but I'm bringing all my thoughts into submission to something that Christ has, owns, does, that is Christ's, namely his obedience.
Yes.
And having a readiness to revenge all disobedience when your obedience is fulfilled. Now, disobedience would be living by the law when his obedience has already fulfilled everything that was required by God. And so, now, one of the things I notice about Jackie Barnard, he has no hesitation in telling all of the people, even his own family, but people who he knew in the past and his old friends, and he has no hesitation in saying, this is how it really is. That's what I used to think, and by God, I mean, that cost me more than I ever want to think about, but this is how I think now because this is the truth.
Yes.
And he always presents it like that. He always says, this is the truth, blah, blah, blah. It's it's really rather interesting. And I'm going to put it to everyone out there that you do have you don't have to, look, you don't ever have to force your opinion, but you have every right to put it if you wish to. And here Paul says that the imaginations and every high thing that exalts itself against the knowledge of God, and every thought that doesn't come into line with Christ's obedience and what that achieved for us and for the whole world needs coming against. Now, family, you wonder why we are very overt and bold, as Paul says, in coming against religion, Christianity in particular, who is the only religion out there that uses the name of Jesus Christ to keep people in bondage. You wonder why? We are very strong in this area. It's because we believe in casting down imaginations and every high thing. This strongholds word in verse 4, as I said, called bulwarks. There are bulwarks that have been built. In fact, Martin Luther wrote a song, "A mighty bulwark is our Lord." They are proud of their bulwarks. Ask any denominationalist. Ask any Methodist if he'd rather be a Presbyterian. Oh, no, they would not. Thank you very much. Ask any Presbyterian if he'd prefer to be a Baptist. You're going to get smacked about the head. Bulwarks are real important in Christianity because bulwarks are the only things that they can use to distinguish between each other, all 40,000 of them. And the reason they have to distinguish between each other is because they've never understood that in Christ we are one.
Exactly. But let me read this in a way that I think will capture the imagination even further.
Mm-mm-mm.
Of our warfare are not self-righteousness, but his righteousness to the pulling down of strongholds. Because his righteousness will cast down imaginations, and his righteousness will pull down every thing that exalts itself against the knowledge of God. And his righteousness will bring into captivity every thought to his obedience. Now, that kind of crystallizes this for me. I hope that helps others also. For the weapons of our warfare are not self-righteousness. They are not a pursuit of the law, as you showed here and reading this in the term flesh. And, of course, the flesh is the law, is the self-righteousness. And so we can read it with the term law. We can read it with, for we walk not according to self-righteousness. Even though we walk in self-righteousness, we do not war after self-righteousness. That's not how the war is won. And the interesting thing here to me also, Barris, is that it says everything that exhausts itself against the knowledge of God, everything that is a thought that God don't think, his righteousness will cause us to think the way he thinks. Paul actually covers this concept again in Philippians chapter 3, which is his testimony about being delivered from his own righteousness. That's what this whole chapter is about, Paul's testimony. Now, Paul's testimony isn't, I used to be a murderer, and now I'm a Christian. Paul's testimony was, I used to be self-righteous through the law, and now I have the righteousness of God. So therefore, my own righteousness is completely, well, he said, it's as dung, completely not something to be trusted in at all. And in verse 13, he says, brethren, I count not myself to have apprehended, but this one thing I do, forgetting those things which are behind. Oh, my goodness. How many times was I taught those things which are behind were those things that we should war against? This is where this war is. We've got a war against alcohol. We've got a war against dirty thoughts. We've got a war against the passions of our flesh. But forgetting those things which are behind, Paul's talking about self-righteousness here, Barris.
Of course he is, because back in verse 4, 5, 6, he says what he used to be. He says, I was circumcised the eighth day,
yep.
Ritual, purity. Of the stock of Israel, national purity. Of the tribe of Benjamin, tribal purity. A Hebrew of the Hebrews, genetic purity. Mm-hmm. As touching the law, a Pharisee, a religious purity. Concerning zeal, persecuting the church, touching the righteousness which is by the law, legal purity, I'm blameless in all of those things.
Yep.
He had whatever it took. He had the wherewithal to be able to look anyone in the eye and say, I was all of these things, prove me wrong. But.
Yes.
I pressed. But where was that verse 13? I forget those things which are behind.
Yes.
Wow.
So to take this as those things which are behind as being, and here again is that line of demarcation. Remember, these lines of demarcation that are set by Paul, by Jesus, one taken, one received, one not received, all of this line is at the cross, not in the somewhere in a decision mode of your life. Now, they can become realities for you. They can feel as though they became true the moment you believed them. But truth doesn't become true when you embrace it. Truth was true long before you embraced it, or there would have been nothing to embrace.
In other words, truth doesn't recognize your belief. Your belief simply recognizes truth.
Very powerful way to put it. And he says, forgetting those things which are behind and reaching forth unto those things which are before. I press toward the mark of the prize of the high calling of God in Christ Jesus. He said, the only way I'm going to press into this is through God's calling in Christ, which that is completely out of our will, that has nothing to do with our righteousness. Let us therefore as many as be perfect. Wow. Now,
so he says here in verse 14, I'm pressing, I'm doing, I'm active, I'm involved in something. And then he says, let us therefore as many be perfect. We were taught that this was the proof that you had to work your little guts out. You mm-hmm. had to work like there was no tomorrow to make sure you stayed in or got in.
I know.
Work.
Yeah.
But if that's true, why does he say in the next verse, let us therefore as many as be perfect?
Yeah, the thing you'd have to say, according to the context, that the effort that Paul is putting in here is not into what he's going into; it's what he's coming out of. And he did admit that this was a struggle for him to get out of this mindset. And he said, "Let us therefore, as many as be perfect, be thus minded. And if in anything you be otherwise minded,"
like all of those things of how self-righteous you can be about your own actions and your past and that which is behind you,
God shall reveal even this unto you. Now, Barris, this goes right back to what we were talking about in this these verses in chapter 10 that you were talking about, and that this righteousness that God has, same writer, Paul, telling us that the righteousness of God would pull down everything that exalts itself against the knowledge of God. Here he has repeated this teaching in his own testimony in here in Philippians chapter 3, which is Paul's testimony. And his testimony is about coming out of self-righteousness and how that if you think anything that doesn't line up with his righteousness, that we are perfect now in the eyes of God. And if there's any way you see yourself other than perfect, that God will reveal to you the place that you're allowing law to determine what God thinks. God will help you see through that also. This is the very same thing. Paul said that his righteousness will pull down everything that exalts itself against the knowledge of God. Not our knowledge of God, but the knowledge of God.
Wow.
This is God's knowledge about us.
Never saw that before.
It is very powerful. This is God's knowledge about us. Everything where we have fallen into trying to figure out our knowledge about God, and that where we're incorrect about what God thinks about us, that is a stronghold. Anything that you see yourself in God's eyes is anything less than perfect in God's eyes is a stronghold. Any place where you see anybody else in the eyes of God as anything else other than perfect, that is a stronghold. And you will never get it to come down through self-righteousness. It is only the righteousness of God that brings these things down. And you place every thought, every judgment you have, every judgment that we have of ourselves and of others, we are going to place it under the obedience of Christ. Now, when you
say that again. Please say that again. That is powerful.
Every judgment that we have, we now bring those predetermined judgments of ourselves and others. We bring those thoughts and lay them at the feet of the obedience of Christ.
So we have the obedience of Christ up on a pedestal here, mm-hmm. and everything that wants to bring itself against that, either our judgments of ourselves or others,
yes,
we put it underneath that.
We put it underneath that. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. His obedience is supreme. Way above our self-righteousness, the obedience that he has carried out is far superior to any obedience or disobedience that we may have.
The latest videos from the Gospel Revolution? You need to.
If you're wondering why I'm not on too many PowerCasts, it's because I'm spending too much time on YouTube and not watching it. I'm performing videos on YouTube. And if you have not seen one of those videos, you need to go to our video channel. just log into YouTube and type in Gospel Revolution 1, all one word, Gospel Revolution and the numeral 1. Or you can link to it from our homepage on our website, gospelrevolution.com. There's a link to our YouTube channel. So, everybody, stay in touch with us in every way. Subscribe to our newsletters and listen to our podcasts and watch our videos on YouTube. And we'll see you everywhere.
This week, Michael, we had two questions I want to cover with you, and we've only got a minute or two left. But Danny Rogers, love that fella. He was one of our recipients of our pharasectomy certificate. I think he's got it up
his wall. Congratulations, sir.
He writes, if Jesus fed thousands of people miraculously, if God fed the Israelites bread from heaven miraculously, why is it that 35,000 children starve to death each day? Where is a miracle to feed them?
Marvelous. You know, right next to those comments was posted a cute little really interesting video of near misses. And it was posted there by my daughter and I think also by the vice president of the Gospel Revolution, Michael Blanche, or was posted somewhere else and they shared it. Now, I know they shared it out of just the intrigue of these near misses. But I think what evolved out of it was this discussion was that these somehow were not just near misses. These were miracles that happened. And that it had to be a miracle that this chaos that suddenly that someone was spared. Well, for every one of those videos that you can show where that someone was spared from the immediate chaos going on around them just by a hair's breadth, I can show you 10,000 of them where people were not spared in these situations and every degree in between.
But isn't that different than 35,000 kids dying every night from malnutrition?
Well, no, it isn't. The fact that God lives in us, it's not to make us miracle workers. It is for God now to live out his existence in humanity. Humanity is not miracle workers. We don't work miracles. Now, you can say that the people who developed the polio vaccine, they're miracle workers. People who save children out of their situation of abuse or whatever it might be, they are miracle workers. People who rescue situations from absolute catastrophe, they're miracle workers. But they're not the miracle workers of turning water into wine and feeding 5,000 and those things. The fact of it is we are doing greater miracles than that because instead of turning water into wine, we now have developed different technology to where that we're feeding way more than 5,000 around the world. Now, if there was 5,000 that were fed in that miracle, how many around the world were starving to death when that miracle took place? You see, if we take the context of the miracle of, let's just stay with that one, the miracle of feeding 5,000, the fact would have been is that the number of people who starved to death around the planet, even with the fewer numbers around the planet, probably at the time exceeded the number that's dying of starvation today. We are actually feeding more hungry people today than Jesus did when he multiplied the fish and the loaves. The thing that keeps us from feeding everyone is geopolitical situations around the world. I'm telling you, I don't see that there's any shortage of food around the world. And it seems as though that the only thing that is preventing us from being able to feed the world is, like I said, geopolitical situations where that aid actually arrives, but aid is consumed by their armies or diverted or kept and sold and all kinds of things. We have plenty of ability to feed people. Let me say one of my little pet peeves is fuel crops. I am absolutely, regardless of what anybody's politics is one way or the other, I absolutely do not like the issue of fuel from crops, because every part of that that we use, now the farmers want to do it because they make money, more money through the government by planting crops for fuel, but that's the less that we have for crops to feed the hungry. See, this is just backward thinking as to what we're trying to do. We're trying to alleviate one problem, and we're creating higher food prices around the world, and we're creating starvation around the world by trying to save the planet at the same time. It just is, it's a colossal mess. But when we think about the miraculous that now exists in mankind, we must think of it in the context, because it doesn't exist any other way unless somebody's got the video to prove me wrong. The miraculous that took place before the cross was to show us and be a type and shadow of the miraculous that was about to take place in the spirit through the same man. Now there's a new heaven. There's a new earth. Things don't happen like that anymore. God has chosen to indwell man. I don't believe that it was he chose to indwell man to limit himself. I think he chose to indwell man to expand himself and his influence in this planet. And now we've got to become aware of that, and we can do more, and we can do, believe me, we're feeding way more than the number of people that Jesus fed when he was on the earth. And starving people who have nothing. We are healing more people than Jesus healed, and the disciples too. Every day we are healing more people than Jesus healed. We are bringing more people back to life today than Jesus ever brought back to life during his lifetime. We're already doing this, but see, our paradigm has got to shift from this religious way of thinking about the miraculous to the God dwelling in us. God doesn't dwell in us so he can act like he used to. God dwells in us now so that there is a new creation that can face these things. If we will stop this religious mindedness, we can get busy. Goodness gracious, I watch CNN's Heroes every year. It's really powerful. And just one man came up with a water filter, a way to filter water, and has spread that throughout the world, where that they just clean drinking water has become inexpensive, and now thousands, tens of thousands of children are saved by this one man's efforts. That's God in you. We don't recognize these things, but I'm telling you, they are a manifestation of God and man being one.
Just reminded me, Danny Rogers, and also yourself, Mike, of a quote by Tony Campolo. Tony Campolo was a teaching professor at Dallas Seminary, Southern Baptist Seminary. He's quite an influential man within that movement. And he said this, and I actually called his office, and I spoke to his secretary, and his secretary ran into Tony's office, and I said, "Can I quote you? Is this actually what you said? I don't want to put this out there unless you actually said it." And the secretary came back to me and said, "Yep, you can quote it. That's what Tony said." And here was what he said. I had it up on my webpage for years. He said, "I have three things I'd like to say today. First, while you were sleeping last night, 30,000 kids died of starvation or diseases related to malnutrition. Second, most of you don't give a shit. What's worse is that you're more upset with the fact that I just said shit than the fact that 30,000 kids died last night."
Yeah.
Kind of says it all, really, doesn't it?
It really does.
Now, our second, Danny's actually, he's on the line to me right now, and he just wrote, "If Jesus fed thousands of people miraculously, if God fed the Israelites bread from heaven miraculously, why is it the 35,000 children starved to death each day, where it's a miracle to feed them?" I think he's just repeated his original question there. And he says, "Even though I don't know the answers, let Mike know how much this gospel means to each of us. I'm reading what he's saying on Facebook chat right now. He's just chatting to me. And let Mike know how much this gospel means to each of us. We love you both. Gee, Danny, thanks, friend.
Yes, thank you so
much. We love you.
And what an excellent thing to bring our focus to on this show where we're dealing with, even though we still got two more to go, we're dealing with things that changed at the cross. This is one of those things that changed, and it changed drastically for the better. For the better. You've got to understand, folks, if God decided to come and live in us, that has to be better than the way it was before.
Of course it's better, mate. Look, Jesus turned water into wine. Australians invented the wine box. You know, the wine cart, the carton, the wine. Yeah. So, of course, you know, that was God in us.
Absolutely.
Say nothing. James McCollum, he's my new friend who knew you years ago or listened to you years ago, and then he said to me, I was walking around Walmart a couple of weeks ago, and I can't remember if he called me or I called him, but just a lovely guy with a heart for people. And James wrote this on our Facebook page. I see it over and over, disputing the Bible. Which parts are to be taken as an allegory, as allegorical, and which parts are supposed to be logical? I do, which parts? I wrote on, he asked this in another group. Let me just see if I can find it, and I will give you what I answered, and you might not like it too much, but let me just find it. Quid pro quo. Fascinating guy there called, he's called himself heterodoxy. So, which is essentially means just thinking outside the box. And I wrote back and I said, it depends on what you belong to. Oh, sorry, it depends on what tribe you belong to. Put simply, in nip and tuck, cut and paste, hit and run Christianity, you can say anything is true. This is Christianity's great strength. It never has to be true, just has to have enough sheeple in tow to make it seem true. And then I put the Christian point of view. The Bible is all true, but the parts you don't like or are too hard to follow are all allegorical. How hard can this be? Oh, and never forget to claim that the Holy Spirit revealed this to you, because that then it becomes mysterious and it is irrefutable. Mm-hmm. So when, just quickly, mate, I didn't give you much time to answer this, but when is it allegorical and when is it not?
It's allegorical when it says it's allegorical.
Did you say it's allegorical when I say it's allegorical?
No, when it says it's allegorical.
give me a for instance, please.
Paul's teaching, he says that all the teachings of the first covenant were an allegory of the real. And the real that we have is the work that was done at the cross. That is not allegorical. Everything that came before the cross was everything that came before the cross was allegorical, or at least potentially allegorical.
Hang on. Now, you said earlier that Jesus Christ taught under a faulty priesthood, or at least I put those words in your mouth. And you're saying that everything that he said was allegorical up until his death?
Everything that the law and the prophets said was allegorical, for
sure. Listen, you've lusted once or twice. I know you have because you're a bloke.
No, I haven't.
Well, you got both hands and you got both eyes.
I know, and for good reason. I've never done anything that would require.
Don't tell us any porky pies here, mate.
I know which covenant I'm under.
Okay, so it's allegorical when it says it's allegorical. So everything in the Old Covenant, and we're not going to see now. You're calling that. You're doing the whole same darn thing. You're saying, it's not allegorical to me because I choose it to be what I choose it to be.
I don't know what you just said.
Does that mean I should go into politics? I'm going to have to find.
I think that's politics.
I'm going to have to go and work for Tony Campolo. He understands me.
That's because he uses that four-letter word. That's why he understands you.
How did you know it was four letters? Because I beeped it out.
Because I heard you.
Listen in your office, in your car, or even your neighborhood bar. You can listen with your whole family. Do a
Gospel Revolution. Information, give me long distance, give me heaven.
So it is that we must leave you, friends. We love you one and all, and we especially thank all of you who, with your financial support, keep this message of grace and peace going out every week. If you'd like to join them in increasing our coverage of this gospel of grace and peace, call our office at area code 321-220-4373. Have your credit card handy and speak to Jeffrey. If you'd like prayer cloths, that's another thing. Mike is in charge of the prayer cloths. If you would like to leave a message for the show, simply telephone me on area code 234-564-0971. Our web address is www.gospelrevolution.com, and we are always up for a Facebook chat at Friends of Mike Williams and the Gospel Revolution. Thanks to Marcel Roos in the Netherlands, All the Gospel All the Time is being broadcast 24-7 at myradiostream.com/gospelrevolution. And so it is good night from myself, Beres Bartlett. It's good night from Danny Rogers. It's good night from James McCollum.
And it's also good night from Michael Williams right here in Houston, Texas. Thank you guys so much for all of you that have contributed and helped in this pledge drive. You know how little we talk about money, even during a pledge drive. Just stop and think how much time during this PowerCast, which this is a pledge drive PowerCast. And if you want to measure how much time we talked about it, even in this, which is dedicated to the pledge drive, click it off. And then go and look at all the other times. We really don't talk about it at all. So thank you guys so much for allowing us to take the time that we did to bring these this situation to you. And thank you for everyone who's responded and those that will respond. And even if you can't, you're still righteous and holy and perfect.
So remember to join us again next week, same time, same channel, where we're going to do the same thing all over again, except for the swearing, except for the cussing. We will try and keep that to a bare minimum.
Better.
Oh, that would be better. All right, bud, thanks so much.
Thank you. It was wonderful.
And it looks like the recording is great. Oh, thank God. All right, bud.
Yes.
Talk to you directly then. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Use only as directed. Absolutely no warranty expressed or implied. Contents under pressure. Use in a well-ventilated area. Do not use while operating a motor vehicle or heavy equipment. No user serviceable parts inside. One size fits all. Parental guidance suggested. Severe pain has sometimes been reported and in rare cases, death. Limited time offer. Call now to ensure your prayer blessing. This supersedes all previous notices. This information is subject to change without notice. At all participating churches near you.